We'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. And then we'll revisit an interview I did with Gary Schnittke on cost-cutting for the 26 growing season, what farmers can and should do as we make our way into a not very good income year, or projected at least to be that case. And as we close out our half hour together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Don Day. He's from Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and it all happens on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the way the numbers finished up in Chicago. March contract in the corn pit was up 4.5 cents at the end of the day, 367 3/4, the final trade. May contract also up 4.5 at 372, and July at 377, 4.25 higher. September corn, $3.81 3/4 a bushel, up 4.25. Next year's December up 4.25 at $3.89 1/2. Soy complex bean futures March contract 883 1/2, the final trade a settlement up 4.5 cents. The May at 883 up 4.25, and July at 888 up 4.25. August contract $8.89 3.5 higher. November $8.88 1/2 up 3.25. Bean meal 60 cents higher at 271.30, and the bean oil up 38 cents at $30.03. Wheat futures finished the March 0.75 cents higher at 474.5, and July at 485. This for the soft red up 0.5. July hard red at 492.5, down 1 cent for the afternoon. Live cattle futures currently trading at 128.52 1/2, up 97 1/2 cents. The April at 129.30, 80 cents higher. January feeders at 155.87 1/2, are up 1.57 1/2, and the March at 151.7 1/2, are 80 cents higher. And lean hogs for the day at $62.90 per 100 pounds, trading $87.5 higher, or 87.5 cents higher for the afternoon. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find all of our programming online in its entirety anytime you'd like. Listen on demand at WILLAG.org.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
Let's take a look at the trade in the outside markets. Crude oil futures trading $28.28 a barrel, down $1.14. They've been as low as $28.23 for the day. They did break above earlier today, $30 at $30.21 a barrel, but still managed to ride along their very low lows. February contract in the ethanol is unchanged at $1.35. Gasoline on the RBOB, the wholesale price at $1.02 0.8 cents. That's down about 0.6 cents per gallon. We've gone to a low of right at $1 a gallon for gasoline. Heating oil at 90 7/10 cents, or diesel fuel is down 2 7/10 cents. And natural gas for the day at $2.09 1/10 cents is down 0.9 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at this hour, 76 points lower at 15,837. The U.S. dollar at 99.045 is up 0.025. And the gold futures on the afternoon at $1,089 are down $1.75. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area tonight after 9 o'clock. A low of 13 degrees, wind chills of 4 to 9 degrees. Southeast winds this evening, a chance of precipitation of 90%. New snow accumulation of 1 to 3 inches are possible. Wednesday, a 30% chance of snow after 9 a.m., or rather before 9 a.m., otherwise cloudy. A high of 23, and then on Wednesday night, mostly cloudy with a low of 17. Thursday, cloudy and 29 degrees.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
It's a Tuesday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this 19th day of January 2016. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, joins us now to take a look at the marketplace. Good afternoon to you, Wayne. It's cold out, and I think most importantly, crude oil continues to go down. And can you believe the wholesale price of gasoline at $1 a gallon?
It's very, very hard to believe. But then again, after lifting the sanctions on Iran and looking at another 500 million barrels of oil a day being put in the open market that's already flooded, it's just like the corn market. We got way too much supply.
We have much, much too much supply, and it puts pressure on the marketplace. However, in the face of these lows and really low prices for crude oil, continuing news from there that we will have a large supply, a glut on the marketplace, we do have corn and soybean prices that managed to rally a bit. Why was that the case?
Well, I think that if we looked at the Commitment of Traders report on Friday, we saw that basically the funds were as short as they've ever been with the number of contracts. So we had a lot of short covering today. We had some cold weather. We talked about the poor crops in South Africa and maybe the little poorer crops as they start in the harvest down in Brazil. So those things totaled up, and basically we sort of run out of sellers other than the funds, and the funds become buyers to lighten up a little bit today.
One of the things that at this time of year we begin to think about is the new season for the United States, and Informa came out with some new planted acreage figures. Did you get a look at those?
I did. They looked at the corn acres. They committed at 88.9. We planted about 88 million last year. We were looking for, the early indications were probably a little over a million, 1.2 million acres more. So a little bit lower than what was maybe thought for there. So we looked at the bean acres, 85.2 with an 82.7 last year. And of course, these increases are coming on the idea that the wheat acres were down 3 million acres basically from last year. But when you looked at it, the total crop acres were 318.6 versus 316.6, or 2 million more acres than we planted last year in all those total crops. So that's sort of surprising.
Yeah, so do you think really that there will be soybeans that are replacing some of those, and I think they are mostly hard red winter acres that came out of the winter seedings last time around?
Will they or will they not? You know, it's going to depend a lot on what happens here during the insurance time period during the month of February and a lot of other things that are going on. So, you know, I think this is a good early indication. Is it going to be what will be? We'll refine this quite a bit. We'll be close to these numbers, but a couple, 3 million change in them could happen very easily depending on what the price is come planting time.
Do you suppose that we'll have follow-through tonight and tomorrow in the up move in the marketplace for both corn and soybeans?
I think the way that they closed in the modified here, the beans are going to be a little bit, maybe a two-sided trade looking tomorrow. But the corn continues to look strong, and they closed well, and we're going to have some good reaction, I think.
Now, what else is moving the marketplace? What's buoying that marketplace other than just low prices?
Well, I think that, we had very good export shipments here this last week. They were both either at the high end or above expectations for what they were doing. We did see that Argentina did lower some of their offers out there today, especially offering feed wheat to undercut some corn numbers and things like that. But all in all, the cold weather here, we use a little more bean meal, a little more corn for feed during this time period. And just the idea that farmers selling sort of dried up for the meantime now, we need to move some things along.
Are farmers willing to hold that bin door shut, and do they have the financial resources to pull that off again this year?
For a while. I think we're going to see some come on out. I think that as we get up another dime in the corn, I think we'll see some corn released.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you being with us.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. Don't forget, you can find all our programming online at willag.org. One of the things that you'll find there is our calendar of events. It's either, depending on how far open you have the web page or whether you're looking at it on a smartphone. And it's the same page on both the desktop, the laptop, and the smartphone. It just depends on how it's organized. organized. But you'll look either at the bottom of the page or over on the right-hand side for our calendar of events. If you'd like us to come out and help you out with one of your shows, you can give me a call at 217-333-9697. Be glad to bring our analyst out and talk about the marketplace with you. Again, you can find our calendar of events online at willag.org and check me out if you'd like. Give me a call at 217-333-9697 if you'd like to organize one of our willag.org Outlook panels. In today's agricultural news, the State Board of Animal Health has announced 9 more commercial turkey farms in southern Indiana have tested positive for highly pathogenic avian influenza. This brings the total to 10 commercial turkey operations. Further testing is underway to determine the virus type, although there have been at least 100 negative tests over the last 24 hours. A 6-mile circle has been drawn around the area to help control the spread of the disease. Depopulation activities are underway already on most sites. Depopulation of the index site was completed earlier this morning. Indiana's governor met with state and federal officials Saturday for an update on the situation. The state says that poultry flocks in the surrounding area are being tested each and every day for the presence of avian influenza. State and federal agencies are working alongside the poultry operators to minimize the impact and eliminate the disease. Well, Syngenta's board last week voted in favor of pursuing advanced takeover talks, which moves the company closer to merging with ChemChina. Bloomberg reports while negotiations continue, talks could still fall apart, and it cannot be ruled out that counterbids may appear. Counterproposals could appear from Monsanto, whose takeover attempts were turned away by Syngenta last year. However, Monsanto officials have said rekindling talks with Syngenta since have proven to be difficult. ChemChina offered about 470 Swiss francs a share in cash for Syngenta last month. And finally today, consumers are still holding tightly to their pocketbooks when it comes to paying more for food products. That according to Oklahoma State University. Meeting Place reports that OSU's monthly survey shows willingness to pay fell slightly for nearly all food products in the last month. Among meat products, deli ham witnessed the largest decrease in willingness to pay at 5.6%. Meanwhile, steak, chicken breast, hamburger, and deli ham are all higher relative to this time last year, while pork chops and chicken wings are lower compared to this time. The survey tracks consumer preferences and sentiments on the safety, quality, and price of food at home and away from home, with a particular focus on meat demand. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Earlier in the year, I spoke with Gary Schnitke about the upcoming 2016 growing season and what farmers could expect. I thought it might be important to take a look back at his numbers and what he thinks income will look like in this growing season.
Income-wise, we're looking at a low-income year. On average, we're projecting something like $20,000 to $30,000 per farm for a grain farm in Illinois, and that's down from $100,000 last year. And the primary reasons for that are lower corn yields, lower soybean prices, and no marketing gains. So we're looking at a lower income year in 2015 than in 2014. What we're seeing is farmers in very strong financial position on average. So, you know, there are some that aren't, but most farmers are in pretty strong financial position. So they can weather these low-income years and simply erode the working capital position of their farm. So we are strong, but there still is a need to cut costs because it's likely that we're in a lower price regime for quite a while. So if we're in this lower price regime, we got to get cost fitting into that lower price and lower revenues. If we don't, we'll just keep eroding working capital until it's gone.
And that's when we'll have a real problem. So right now they've come out of some really boom years where they've made really good money, better money than they have over their careers, over their lifetimes. And they're settling back to some areas. And this is typical in the farm economy that you have really good years and really lean years. Most, I don't think, will understand that you can run from $100,000 in. This is gross, or
this is net income. So we have $100,000. We averaged $100,000 of net income last year, and we're predicting $20,000 to $30,000 for this year. And again, you know, yeah, that's the commodity price market. Just look at it from this perspective. 2010, 2011, and 2012, we were running $5 to $6 corn price. So just for easy math, say you had $5 corn, 200 bushels, that's $1,000. Now we're looking at below $4 corn price, but just quick math, 4 times 200 is 800. So we've lost $200 of revenue, and actually more than that. We're probably grossing somewhere on a corn acre of $750 an acre compared to something over $1,000 two, 3 years ago. So $300 less revenue.
Then producers have to begin to cut, you believe. They should not just use their working capital, that which they have built up to maintain things, thinking, hey, I'll get through this year and things will get better, because it appears that we'll have lower prices for a longer period of time. They're going to want to know, what do I cut? I know you're suggesting that they start with cash rents, if possible. And in some cases, you suggest they may look at giving up a farm.
Yeah, so if you look at where average cost and average cash rents are now, so cash rents vary a lot, but at an average level, you have to look at something like $100 of cost cuts. And that's going to have to come from non-land, and, you know, it has to come from fertilizer, seed, machinery, depreciation, and chemicals, because those are the big cost. If it doesn't come from there, we're not going to get it down, and cash rents. So the thing that I would suggest, particularly for farmers, is to look and see if you don't want to particularly cut cash rent and hold it for hopefully higher price years in the future, that you do the budget before 50 corn and 1050 soybeans. And if you don't make money at that level, then you probably need to do something, because we're long run prices optimistically are at those levels. So if you're not making money at those levels, it's hard to foresee you making money anytime. So that's sort of the benchmark. But even given that, you know, we do need to get those costs in line, and simply eroding net working capital doesn't impress me as being a prudent strategy.
How do you do it then? Because there are things that they probably can't control a lot. Price of fertilizer, price of fuel should be down. That's a big input. Price of seed?
So if we're looking at non-land cost, machinery depreciation will come down if you purchase less capital. So have to cut machinery purchases back to something below $30 an acre, back to the sort of the levels we were at pre-2006. Fertilizer, we may see some relief because of lower prices, but you really have to look at P&K, see if we need to apply as much as we are, and nitrogen as well. Seed's the sticky one. Maybe looking at lower technology seed, saving some money on the technology, but not the key there is not sacrificing too much on the yield side. So it is hard to think about a lot of those costs coming down, but you got to have to think about machinery, really dialing in the fertilizer, pesticides, reducing optional, and maybe doing more crop scouting. So all of those things need to be considered. Again, we do need to see $100 cost from cuts from some source.
In general, are farms overpowered? Could they get rid of machinery?
Well, we could. Getting rid of machinery, maybe not so much as not purchasing as much. We saw quite a bit of machinery purchases in 2010 through 2012, 2013. That probably has given us a reserve on most farms where they can not purchase machinery for a while. That's probably a wise thing to do, because we've got to get those capital costs lower.
Is there anything in the FBFM records when you aggregate them, and I don't know whether you can see this, that shows a difference from farm to farm in terms of category, for instance, conventional tillage versus no-till or something along those lines?
Yeah, we haven't looked at that recently about whether no-tillers have lower, lower cost, and we need to look at that again. The big thing, though, is if you're going to no-till and you want to save on cost, you got to get rid of the big equipment, which the optional stuff is the larger tractors and some of the tillage equipment. Because if you don't get rid of the equipment, the overhead costs are still there. So you have to reduce machinery inventory to get the cost savings associated with no-till.
Other primary costs that they can take a look at that would help them structure themselves better for these coming years?
So we got to look at those five main costs. I would suggest not cutting back on crop insurance, probably still thinking about 85% coverage levels because we still do have price and yield variability out there. There will be some relief on the fuel side, but $10 an acre. And on the other side, interest rates may be rising a little bit, so debt costs probably are rising. So, keeping the thing that we've always seen is that those profitable farms are the ones that keep cost control in line, and machinery costs are a big part of that. So really looking at the machinery cost side is key.
Gary Schnittke, of course, is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the University of Illinois. You can read more from him anytime you'd like on the Farm Doc Daily website. He normally updates that website each and every Tuesday. In a couple of minutes, I'll be back. We'll take a look at the weather forecast. Don Day of Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming, will join us here on the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families for 100 years. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
It's National Popcorn Day. Popcorn first became a hit in the U.S. during the Great Depression, especially in movie theaters, where it was often sold at 5 cents a bag. By the way, at least six cities claim to be the popcorn capital of the world, including Valparaiso and Van Buren, Indiana, and Ridgeway, Illinois. On this day in agricultural history in 1736, James Watt was born. A Scottish inventor, his steam engine contributed substantially to the Industrial Revolution. In 1813, Sir Henry Bessemer was born, an English inventor and engineer. He developed the first process for manufacturing steel inexpensively. In 1825, Ezra Dagrid and Thomas Kensett of New York City were granted the first U.S. patent for food storage in cans. They had been canning seafood since developing the process in 1819. Tin cans had been used by the military and explorers since at least 1813, but their development did not really take off until after the Civil War. And in 1915, George Claude of Paris was issued a U.S. patent for a neon tube advertising sign. Claude introduced neon signs in the U.S. in 1923. A Packard car dealership in Los Angeles purchased a pair for $2,500. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Country Financial, now through March hosting information sessions for farmers throughout the state of Illinois. Topics include updates to both the federal crop insurance program and the farm bill. And at most locations, how to use grain marketing and crop insurance together to manage risk. More information is at countrycrop.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On this Tuesday afternoon, it's the 19th day of January. We are now halfway through meteorological wintertime, dawn day of day weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Why don't you give me a recap of how it's been in the U.S. to begin with?
Well, you know, the first half of the winter was remarkably non-winter-like for a lot of the central and eastern United States, with very warm temperatures in most of November and especially December, while all the wintry and stormy weather was out west. But it's going to be a complete reversal. The second half of this winter is going to have a lot more winter, especially in the central and the east, and really the whole nation is going to experience what has been delayed for the first half of winter. The second half of winter is going to be a wild ride.
Does that mean wild cold temperatures, wild amounts of precipitation, both as rainfall and snow, or what do we see?
Yeah, I think all of the above. One thing that you do not tend to see in a strong El Nino pattern like this is you don't tend to have prolonged periods of severe cold, but you certainly have episodes of much colder weather that can sneak in, just like what we've experienced. But you have a real volatile mix of that colder Canadian air and a very juiced-up southern jet stream from those warm Pacific waters. So you do tend to see a storm track that's more south. You tend to see the snow extent get pushed further south in a winter like this. And we're going to see the East Coast see a big storm this Friday and Saturday. Another system will go up the East Coast about 5 or 6 days later, and there could be freezing precipitation all the way down into the deep south with these storms.
Will the Midwest, in particular the Urbana-Champaign area in Illinois, feel any of the snow or a whole lot of impact as opposed to maybe a couple, 2 or 3 inches like we're supposed to get tonight, I believe?
Yeah, most of the Corn Belt, and the central and the western Corn Belt in particular, is going to find itself in a pattern where we're going to be on the edge of the action, at least initially. Now, we do see, when we peer out past 10 days, 15 days or so, a couple of storm systems that are going to track further west. So while the Corn Belt and Midwest will just be on the edge of these first two storms, I think the action for the Midwest will come just thereafter.
Turn your attention to the growing areas of South America now.
Over the past week, we talked last week about how the rain had returned to portions of Brazil and those growing areas. And Brazil is still going to be the area that has the most precipitation. The focal point of the rain will be a little bit more north and east, but some of those growing areas looking at pretty good chances of rain, especially in the southeast and eastern areas of Brazil. Argentina, though, a little bit on the drier side.
Now, not only drier, but it looks like Paraguay and Argentina will be hot, 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 hot.
Yeah, temperatures are there going to be above normal. Conversely, you just go over to Brazil, the reverse. So you have a contrast there of hot in those areas as mentioned, and then Brazil, which is going to be cooler. So if there's an area to watch in South America, it's going to be those growing areas of Argentina.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, joins us on this Tuesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.